You are tuned to High Plains Morning on member-supported High Plains Public Radio. This is time to have a little chat. We've been hearing so much in the news about the Texas power grid, about the failures. And, of course, we know here in the Texas Panhandle, we were not the ones that were affected as much by this Texas power grid issue. And we're very much taking a look at it. I wanted to have Wes Reeves of Xcel Energy come in. He's been keeping everyone very well informed about all the different ins and outs, how to think about it, how to see how we are connected in the Texas Panhandle versus how the Texas grid. And, you know, we all want to know what's going on. So, Wes, thank you so much for keeping us all informed. And what's been going on?
We did have some short controlled outages, as we call them. One day it was just one round, and the next day it was about four rounds or so. But yes, thankfully, at my house, it was only about 45 minutes to an hour each time, as compared with what we saw downstate, where my daughter lives in Austin, and she was out of power for about 4 days, I think. So definitely, yes, it was a very different situation. So, and as you pointed out, there's something called the Texas grid. We're not on the Texas grid, so... very typical for the Panhandle to be left out, I guess, of everything. So, but in this case, yeah, in this case, it was probably not a bad deal. So the Texas grid really is wholly within the state of Texas. There are parts of Texas beyond the Panhandle that are not part of that. So if you look at El Paso, they're not part of the Texas grid. And then the Northeast and the Southeast corners of Texas over in East Texas are actually not on the Texas grid. And then pretty much the whole of the Panhandle and a large portion of the South Plains. And, of course, we take in eastern New Mexico. So that's our area here. We're part of the Southwest Power Pool, which is actually a reliability organization that covers about 14 states within the Eastern Interconnect of the United States. So the Eastern Interconnect is a grid, and it stretches from the Great Plains all the way to the Atlantic Coast. And then you have the Western Interconnect beyond the Rockies, and then you have Texas. So the East and West are, you know, you got power lines across state lines. So they're regulated by the federal government and the states in which they serve, whereas the Texas grid does not touch any of this and is only regulated by the Public Utility Commission of Texas. So that's been intentional. There's been a feeling for many years that we don't want the federal government within that business. But it's worked out fine for us here in the Texas Panhandle. We've been regulated by both the feds and the states for many years. So that's kind of the basic difference. We're just not on the same grid, and so conditions were very different.
Is there a reason that Texas Panhandle was not on that grid? It was just the convenience of the location?
It's more geography, I think. So we were so isolated for so many years. I mean, we're just kind of out here, you know. And even as recently as 10 years ago, we were barely connected with the outside world. We had a few connections, but within the last decade, we've invested a lot of money on high voltage transmission connections to the east, which enabled us to join a broad power market that the Southwest Power Pool coordinates. And during that time, they began to dispatch our power plants. So they actually, we have these fleet of power plants in the region, but we don't decide day to day which ones operate. We get a message the day before based on the economics of power, and they tell us which power plants to operate, and that's based on the cheapest price generally. So sometimes we're importing power and sometimes we're exporting power. So we're very connected to these other 13 states within the Southwest Power Pool. So that's been a very beneficial thing for us. We have access to additional power if we get into an emergency situation.
And now the fact that we are able to amortize that across all these different places, that is almost specifically what the issue was with the Texas power grid, is it works great when Texas is acting like Texas, but that's over. It gets a little spooky.
They definitely didn't have anybody to call on, so it was just them. And they had some of the same issues we had. So our biggest problem and the reason we wound up with these controlled outages is we had a curtailment of natural gas on the pipeline that was feeding our power plants, so we couldn't run our plants. They were available to run, and they were running on a limited basis. But we couldn't run them at full capacity. And this was happening all across the Southwest Power Pool, also happening within the Texas grid. Additionally, though, they had some issues with their plants freezing up. A lot of their designs were made for tropical climates, really, in many ways. We built our power plants to withstand very cold temperatures. So we did not have that issue of freezing up. The same with our wind turbines, and there was a lot brought up about wind turbines. Our wind turbines were mostly operable. They just didn't have any wind the first part of that. Then the wind picked up and helped us a lot. So I think there's a lot, been a lot of misinformation about it. But definitely, if you get into the Texas grid, all the resources, I wouldn't say failed them, but they didn't come through when they needed them. So nuclear, coal, gas, everything was having trouble, whereas we were just having trouble getting gas to our power plant. So that was kind of the big difference. So people always ask, well, why was Amarillo just off for a little bit, you know, and Austin was not? And it was basically that. We had our plants were running. We just didn't have the gas, but we also had this connection with our neighbors. And so we were in pretty good shape for the most part.
And I was following this story all over the place across different outlets, and I saw something about, you know, and most of us don't know the ins and outs of how natural gas works. Many people in this region absolutely do, though. And I'm just wondering, there was something about, oh, there was no water removal, and that's one of the reasons. We have it set up so that we take the water out of the natural gas, and it wasn't so much down there, and that's why it froze more down there?
You know, I'm not certain. I do know that there are liquids within natural gas, and they're valuable liquids oftentimes, and they're extracted and used for other things. But I understood that some of the gas wells were freezing up, and so gas was not making it into the pipeline. Another problem was when they started having these rolling outages in ERCOT, some of the gas wells and production areas were affected by lack of power. So it just compounded itself, and that's still being determined. You may have noticed there are hearings going on at the Capitol. Everybody's trying to figure out what happened, so I don't want to act like an expert because I haven't learned all of that either. But just based on what we do know, that was the problem. We just didn't have the gas when we needed it.
And, you know, as Texans, like as people who are part of a state, we all feel very connected. I know that there was a lot of concern, people that have connections here down below, people that are, you know, that we're friends and family with that don't really get it, you know, are calling and be like, are you okay? You know, it's like, we're okay. We're not on that grid. But I do believe that there is quite an interest, whatever grid you're on, even if you're in Kansas right now. We don't want to see this happen again, and we know that these weather events are going to continue. So maybe this is a good thing. Maybe this is going to have a reckoning, and there's going to be some changes. Do you foresee any kind of like the conversations that maybe you see coming up for how to not let this happen again?
Sure. You know, about 10 years ago, something similar happened, and I was living in Amarillo then, and we didn't have the controlled outages, but we had the same curtailments of natural gas for the same reason. So there's been a lot of frustration as to why this hasn't been fixed. It's very, very expensive to weatherize gas wells and gas production facilities, but I think there's going to be a stronger push to make sure that the fuel continues to flow. There may be some changes. There's been talk of changes with the marketplace within Texas, within the Texas grid. I haven't heard anything about any structural changes within the Southwest Power Pool, but mainly we want to ensure that we've got some ace in the hole. And we do, because we actually were able to mix fuel oil into some of our power plants. I didn't mention that. They were designed to burn fuel oil, which is not the most efficient thing to do. But in an emergency, you call the tankers in and bring the fuel oil in, and that helped a lot. So we'll be looking at things we can do locally to ensure our fuel supplies are not interrupted. But I think there's going to have to be some regulatory changes, possibly some investment. Who knows? We're going to see a lot of ideas in the next few weeks.
Yeah, that's something they did an interview with the new energy secretary, and that was something I took away from it, was that it is extremely expensive and painful and a long horizon to make these fixes and make these changes, but obviously it needs to happen. So sooner than later, hopefully, you know.
Exactly. You know, and some of it, you know, the way we're regulated within Texas, you have the Railroad Commission, which is a separate thing from the Public Utility Commission, but the Railroad Commission is looking at gas and oil. And then you have the PUC looking at electricity. So there may need to be, I mean, who knows, there may need to be some crossover there. They need to just get on the same page. We all need to work toward the same goal, and it's often difficult. And then we move farther from these events, and people are like, oh, everything's okay. You know, you don't want to, this hopefully doesn't happen that often, but who knows? I wouldn't have expected it to happen twice in 10 years.
Yeah. And then you hear, oh, these are the last two hottest days. Of hurricanes. We know that the science is pointing it's definitely going to keep happening.
You know, there's definitely something going on with the climate, and we need to be prepared for that. And we don't know what the most extreme scenario is, but we probably just saw it, you know, with the cold weather. And exactly, it could be a very hot summer, and we could be right back in these conditions, especially downstate. And there are some differences in how power plants downstate, their power plants are their own company. They're not part of a utility company, so they just sell power is all they do. Up here, they're owned by the utility companies, and we have something called a capacity market as well, and that gets into the weeds. But basically, you as a customer are not only paying for the energy you buy, but you're also paying to ensure that that power plant is there and operable and ready to provide you power. So they don't have that kind of market down there. So that may be looked at as well. And that comes from the deregulation of the Texas grid back in 2021 or whenever. 2001, 20 years ago. It's just very different. And we were going to be part of that model, and then we were exempted about 2 years later because of some reasons that are kind of easy to see. We're on a different grid. We're part of the Eastern Interconnect. So there are a lot of reasons why they exempted us from that.
Yeah, and the second part of this that I'm hearing so much of now is, of course, the aftermath. You know, I grew up in the Midwest. We had horrible winter storms. I remember my mom making grilled cheese on the top of like a propane, I'm sure very dangerous, one of those terrifying heaters from the 80s.
Uh-huh.
This isn't something that a lot of people are prepared for. You know, I realized we would just have eaten each other if we would have lost power for more than 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at these people coming forward and saying, hey, I had power the whole time. I only lost it this small amount, but now I just got a $9,000 bill.
Yes.
Who wouldn't have opted to, like, can I try to freeze to death? Because it would be better than getting
right.
that bill.
Exactly. And so that's a very good question, because we got a lot of concern about that last week. So because we are regulated differently, we can't just turn around and charge you a $9,000 bill. All of our rates are regulated. There was a huge fuel bill that was paid. We paid way more for natural gas, even though we weren't getting it, much of it, but it's supply and demand, right? So we've got that, whatever that amount is sitting out there, that's going to have to be recovered somehow. So we'll be looking at possibly a fuel cost surcharge over, say, a 24-month period that will impact monthly bills, but not by $7,000. You know, probably less than $10. We don't know where that's going to land at this point. But you'll be hearing more about that. But we do protect our consumers and our customers from those spikes. And that's going to be very helpful going forward.
And it just seems to me that the model that the Texas grid was going on was definitely kind of a sunny day thing. This is how this is going to work, and most of the time it's going to be fine. And it does seem like they got caught with egg on their face, where it's like, no, if this does happen, here's what's going to happen. And who's going to be able to pay that? Nobody.
There's been a few little weaknesses in that model, and it's usually something we see in the summertime when it gets super hot and the price of the wholesale electricity spikes. They actually have a price cap. And just put this in perspective, they price it by the megawatt hour. It's usually around $18, $20 a megawatt hour. The price cap is $9,000 a megawatt hour, and that's what they were hitting. So, and we had some really high costs of wholesale power as well. But as I said, we can't just turn around and dump that on the customers. So we're going to work that out to where it's not as painful.
Yeah, I remember seeing a story where one of the companies said, "Leave us now.
Yes.
You are about to get a terrifying bill." But no one had power. You can't leave.
It's so quickly. You know, and another thing I'll say about that was probably a minority of the customers within that region, because those customers we saw, the gritty customers, they were on a variable rate plan, so they probably didn't read the fine print. You know, and that was the problem with. In the deregulated marketplace, if you're going to play in that marketplace, you've got to read and understand what you're getting. And most of us don't have time to do that. So I think there's been a lot of criticism about that as well.
Yeah. It's almost like e-insurance when you just go with the liability.
Yeah. I've done that.
Yeah.
I'm doing it right now. So
we all roll the dice.
I've got old bad cars right now. So.
So what's the situation right now as overall, you know, looking at the, you know, Texas energy, Do you feel as if it's going to be kind of a long time change, or is there a lot of energy to get this figured out pretty quickly?
Well, right now there's a ton of energy to do something. And like I said, I've been around, I've worked here 24 years. And so I've also seen this fade over time. So it's going to be, it really depends on how much the people who suffered through this are going to stay after it. And we all tend to minimize things after it's in the past, you know, it wasn't so bad. But I think, ask my daughter, she's going to remember this for a long time, because when she finally got back at her apartment, she had no water. The pipes were all frozen, and then she went 3 days without water beyond that. So, you know, people don't forget that anytime soon, and we don't need to be living like that. This is Texas. We're supposed to be good at what we do, and I think there's going to be a lot of effort to make sure that never happens again.
So because your daughter went through this, just give me like kind of a, as a dad, things that people could do in the event that, hey, we don't know what's going to happen. What should you have on the ready to make sure that, hey, if you lose power for, say, 4 days, which most people did, what do you need to make sure you have? Like, this is just going to, I don't know. I became a prepper. I went to REI's co-op and just bought, we had nothing.
I think it's just a matter of really for any time, just make sure you've got things you can eat that are dry or, you know, not perishable, and make sure you have blankets in the wintertime. Be very careful with any sort of heat that you make because, you know, there's a lot of devastating fires. I've seen a lot of reports of fires in the last few days around the area. So you got to be careful with that. You also need a plan B. Where can I go if I just can't stand this any longer? Which is what my daughter did finally. She left and found a friend who had lived near a hospital. So that circuit was energized. So, you know, just think about those things, especially if you have someone who's sick, you have an elderly parent living in your house, or you have a small baby. You just need to be aware at all times that we're comfortable, and that's good. But sometimes that goes away, and we've got to be prepared for that.
Absolutely. Well, everybody else who maybe feels like, well, we dodged a bullet here in the Texas Panhandle, I think right with that next to our heart is the, you know, amount of, you know, concern for the people that didn't dodge that bullet.
Exactly.
And so many people were okay, and a lot of people weren't. So I really do hope that, you know, you keep, you know, you've done such an incredible job informing people here in the Texas Panhandle, making us kind of aware of how this works. And, you know, as Texans, we are all very connected to other Texans, mm-hmm. and, you know, to advocate for this, the Texas grid and people that, you know, were impacted by this so, so gravely.
It's easy sometimes just to start pointing fingers, and that's we do that, but we need to be focused on solutions, you know, moving forward. And I just, before I stop, lose the thought, our power plant guys, we've got two plants here in Amarillo. They were working 16 hours, so I just really want to shout out to them. All I did was talk during that time. I was in my home, and it was mostly warm. Those guys and gals worked so hard, and I'm so proud of them. We all are. So just think, you know, we thank the linemen a lot, but also think about those power plant workers who are stuck in that place, you know, and they can't leave. They can't go back to their families. So we appreciate them so much.
Yeah, major shout out to everybody who worked to, you know, shore these things up. I saw something in Corpus Christi. There was like 3,000 turtles that were stunned by the cold.
Yeah, that was
the
crazy.
Number of helpers that were just making sure things were as good as they possibly could be. And this is people that, you know, are having to plug in their cars and stuff.
Yes.
I mean, everything shut down.
We have people like that here. It's just so cool. They were on the lookout for people who needed rides and whatnot. And I saw a lot of really good deeds being done. And it makes me proud of where I live. I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, this is definitely, the High Plains is a very generous place. We try to take care of our neighbors, but man, my car wouldn't start, so I don't know who was taking care of
we
anything.
We had one of those situations too. I had everything, but at least I had food. I had water. You know, water is a big deal too. We don't think about that, but you lose power, then in the cold, you possibly could lose your pipes, and people did experience that here, so I don't want to minimize that at all, and it was tough for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that, you know, we're having days where it's 50 and 60 degrees now. It feels a little more okay, but let's not forget that we got some work to do here across the Texas Panhandle and beyond to just make sure that everybody supports one another, and I think that's always nice to remember. This storm affected everybody across our
exactly.
region. It
that's
was just
great
miserable.
Message. Appreciate that.
Negative 13. Come on. We're not built for that.
I took a lot of pictures of my weather app, little screenshots. I know people got tired of that, but it's just like, I can't believe this. So
it was pretty bad. Well, I'm glad we're on the other side of it. And again, I thank you for everything you've done to make sure we're aware. And please keep these press releases and things coming out so we have some kind of a clue. It's like being in a biology class again.
Well, thank you for
seventh grade.
Paying attention and helping us. That was immense help. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, let's go ahead and hear some Malcolm Holcomb. This is a guy from Oklahoma who would know. Let's do the song We Struggle on High Plains Morning. Thank you, Wes.
Thank you.